Three, two, one.
Who's the best show here?
Cat Show!
Who's the best show here?
Cat Show!
All right, that's pretty good. That's the best one yet.
That's how I got hired at Chippendales.
Pizza, pizza.
I just have to tell them I'm not a thief, just a pervert.
Big O! Showtime!
Well, you were making egg poo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a Little Thing Tech Show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the cast, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that a link it bad. For the streaming, go direct to DLNTS.org. And IRC channels are LinuxLink.net. Bound Tech Show. Just sit right there, cause the cast is just about to begin.
Welcome to episode 901 of the Linux Link Tech Show. On the show tonight, we have Pat.
How's it going? Happy spring.
We got Joel.
From Dublin, Ohio.
And we got Joe.
Hello.
Yeah. So before you get into your 3D printing stuff, let me give you an action update.
Uh-oh.
Remember Action News, Pat? Dun, 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 dun.
Which one's out the shitty Philly? ABC.
I thought Action News was out of New York.
New York.
No, I think it's the shitty Philly ABC.
Or maybe that's it. You know what? I don't remember now.
KYW.
Action News. Oh yeah, it is Philadelphia. Anyway, action. So get this, right? At the end of the week last week, I got everything working on this on my workflow, and it was tested and everything was working great, and then I scheduled a meeting and like we pushed it into production.
Along and screwed it all up.
Well, we pushed it into production on Friday because they wanted to get something that, you know, pushed in there, and I'm like, let's just, you know, can't you wait till Monday when we're having the meeting and introducing how this all works to the rest of the team? And they're like, we want to really push it tonight on Friday night, right? So push it and they do it and everything's working fine. Everything's fine. So Monday morning we have the meeting and I'm like demoing how it works. And I'm like, this is how you do it. If you want to, you know, here's the change log. We implemented a change log. You just put this like placeholder in there and it'll automatically update the placeholder with the version when it gets merged in. So you just add that in your line in this and explain how to do that. And I'm like, don't touch the version text file because that is automatically handled. And I'm like, and if you want to bump the major version, you could do that. You put a major label on the pull request. And if you want to push it directly to VIP main, just put this label on your pull request and it'll do it. Otherwise, it's going to poop in a pull request and, you know, all these things. And after I was done, like one of the leads is like, this is too complicated. He's like, I don't know if we need 7-bar versioning on this, and the rest of this workflow is too complicated, and I'm like, well, you know, this is what was decided upon, so this is what I implemented, you know, and he's like, I see you did a lot of work on this, and like, maybe we could just simplify this, and I'm like, sure, whatever, so I ripped everything out of what I did. Oh man, it was a learning experience. So, I mean, part of me is like, man, I wish we would have come to this decision when we were talking about the requirements and we designed the 3 or 4 different, workflow charts.
Isn't
and how
that
this
always
gonna
the
go.
Way it is? Some asshat who isn't involved with the whole process is involved with the final review and then all of a sudden it's not right.
Well, I mean, this guy's not an asset. I think he was pretty right. Cause like, what we have now is we got rid of the change log. We got rid of the pushing anything to main. It's only going to the staging thing. And we got rid of all that. All it is it just pushes right into the staging and it creates a tag. And then I created a job today that allows you to push a tag release into whatever, you know, staging or main or whatever branch you want to on the VIP Go side of things. So yeah, I got it to work, and it was a great learning experience for all the hoops I had to jump through and different things I had to do, and it was great doing that. But I do think it was a little bit on the complicated side. Obviously, we made it a hell of a lot simpler. Now it's just a version file that increments by, and it's just a number. We're not doing semvar versioning because we really didn't need that. But it's just a way to reference tags and see what release is out there in that file. We're not doing the change log because they never do change logs on the TMO mat. It's interesting because we get people coming over from other teams and they're like, where's your change log? And I'm like, I don't want to have this discussion again. No, but so.
Yeah, well, that's like some of the, I don't know, it's like we get, all of a sudden they get this one ticket and it's like, we need to move the runtime to production. I'm like, what? Huh? What? Huh? So I asked the client, I said, client, do you have your prior case when the non-prod work was done? And he's like, yeah, here it is. I'm like, one of the Bangalore team did it. I'm like, oh, okay, I'm going to assign this to him because hopefully he can figure out what the fuck you're talking about. That's not what I, how I, that's not how I said it, but that's how I felt. I'm like, I'm like, okay, cause, and I could, and even worse though, I go to that snow ticket to see if there's changes or if any documentation. I couldn't really find any. So I'm like, all right. He can handle this. Let him do it. there's certain things I'll let them do. Certain things I won't. And that's one of those things I will because I'm like, I don't, ugh. But at least some good news is we're going to be sunsetting our SharePoint stuff. So we're going to eventually not support that. So that's perfectly fine by me. So that's, and I talked about we lost teammates and we're down another, by the way, if you know Linux, Windows, or anything like that, let me know. I might be able to get you a job. and I know you guys do, but I know you guys probably don't want to come to this company, but if anybody listening does, just let me know.
No, you were right the first time. I don't want to come to that state.
Well, no, you're not Dakota, Ohio. You can work remotely. We have teammates that work from Florida, Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania. Well, yeah, Pennsylvania.
What's the pay?
Oh, I don't know. I want to say it's going to start at least $100,000.
It's going to take at least $120,000 to make me.
Yeah, I don't know if
comfortable enough.
That's the one thing I'm wondering too, is they're talking about, instead of hiring another senior guy, maybe, so we just hired one senior admin, although we're down to two on the assurance side, but then we merged with the transition team. So we're there used to be a transition team that would take people to the cloud. Now we are the same team, but they still do the transition work and we take care of the steady state. My team does. So, but then like I got another, project for one of my California schools where I get to implement another, payment, e-commerce solution. They have one called, Pay My Tuition, which will let, a student pay in, like, if a student lives, say, in Russia, right, or has a family in Russia, but they live in here and they want to pay their tuition, they can pay it in rubles if they want to pay it in rubles. Instead of having to have a U.S.-based credit card account, which does things in U.S. dollars. So that'll be interesting, but... Mm. But and I'm trying to say that to get excited about it because I'm not excited about it. but anyway. But that's life in the cloud. So.
Yeah, but
3D.
Hold on.
Go.
I was just gonna say that's the excitement. Yeah. Yep. So GitHub Actions, man, we're rocking and rolling on those things, and
there you go.
You know, one of the problems that I have with it, like I really enjoy them. They're it's a lot more streamlined than Jenkins. Cause you don't have to worry about, so you don't have to write in Groovy, which is, Groovy syntax, which I'm not a big fan of. So there's some pros and cons to all that. And it relies pretty heavily on whatever software that you have installed in your runner. And so they provide out of the box, like Ubuntu, I think, there's a couple different versions. You get Ubuntu 20. What was the latest, long-term support? 2010?
I think
so. Was that the last one? So you could probably, you can make your own runners. And so it's like incredibly flexible and it's all YAML, for configuration. And then you could write your own actions and there's a lot of actions out there in the GitHub marketplace, but you tend to end up with like that one thing you want to do that there's just no action to do it. You know what I mean? Like I want to get something out of something and there's 50 million things to do part of that, but not what you want to do. So
right.
You run into that problem. And then the action thing is kind of like the Wild West though, because it's not completely vetted by GitHub, so to speak. So you're kind of left on your own and at the mercy of whoever developed the action. So some of them are hit and miss. And if it's not something that's been updated in a couple months, it may not function properly. So you run into that problem. Now, that being said, we needed to implement PHPCS for inspecting our code and sniffing and everything. And there was one that was put out by VIP WordPress Go, and they talked about setting it all up, and they had a repository for something. But this other partner that they work with created a GitHub action for just doing it all, and it made it like really simple just to drop that in and pretty much get the same kind of response that if we opened up a PR on their repository and let their inspection tool do it. It was essentially the same inspection tool that we could run in our repository, and that took me all of like an hour or so to get going properly and set up to finally, you know, exactly figure out what it is I needed to do in our repo with setting up a bot. Like, I spent more time trying to get this bot account or whether we needed to set one up or I could use this other account or whatever. But anyway, that's neither here nor there on that. But I'm digging it. I think the biggest downside to this, and this is Jenkins also, is it's really difficult to test things without having to work on like your production workflow, so to speak. So if like we work in repositories and have it automated all, like when you do a pull request, it's not really easy to work on that and not like do the same thing, especially if you want to do stuff like tagging and everything. You can work in separate branches, but then you have to go back and delete it. And that's primarily what I've been doing. I tell you to talk about using that tool ACT, and I kind of use both that and testing in different branches because ACT is not 100% consistent in what it will allow you to do. And sometimes it doesn't work with certain things. It becomes a pain in the butt. So once you get familiar with using that tool and being able to do stuff locally on your workstation to test it out when it doesn't work, it's a pain in the butt, and you got to switch everything up to different branches. But anyway, it's cool. So that's where I'm at there. That being said, let's hear the 3D printing.
Yay. Well, I went to go start a fairly long print earlier this week, and it warmed up, but never printed. You know, it wasn't printing. It was still the nozzle and the bed were still heated up. And then I go down to where the micro SD slot, you know, usually has the, you usually can feel this, the micro SD card there. And the card wasn't there. I'm like, what in the? So I look, and right next to the printer, there's a card. So I go to pick the card back up to stick it back in to hopefully restart. No, not that. No, not. Fortunately, nothing like that. But I go to stick it back in, and it pops right back out. So it won't hold a micro SD card. The slot apparently is shot. Okay. So I had a spare pie. Fired up Octopi on that, and I was back to printing. All right. So now, there's a couple things I could do. One is I could pull the board out, and I can order a new a replacement slot and try to solder that on there. I say try because it's very tiny. I don't think that I
ass.
Yes. So
easier with a hot air gun, but still a pain in the ass.
Right. So that's one option. Probably not going to happen. The other option is to replace the board itself, which that's actually probably more likely to happen because not only can I replace it so I can get the card back in action, but there's also a potential that I can put a board in there that has a higher version number and that has the silent drivers so that the printer itself runs more silent than it normally does. So that's which is also an option. So now it's just trying to find the board at the price I'm willing to pay. It's probably between 40 to 80 depending on which board I get. So I'm going to try and look at a Big Tree Tech has the SKR boards. I'm just trying. The other thing is also trying to find it so that it works with my particular printer. You know, does it have a version of Marlin or whatever firmware that will, you know, work with my printer? So for now though, I'll just use Octoprint. My Octopi, one thing I kind of don't like about that is, what I found out with Octopi, at least the way things are now, I don't know if it's always been this way, but if I have it plugged, the USB cable plugged into it, and I flip the printer itself off just because I'm not going to print for a while, the display will not go off. In fact, it looks like the board itself is still powered up by using the USB off of the Pi for some stupid reason. I can't get the screen to go completely dark unless I pull the USB cable. So, not a big deal. You know, I can do that when I want to shut down. Like, for example, I didn't want the fans and stuff on the printer running right at the moment. So, but shouldn't be too difficult. I mean, I had to basically pull every cable off the board, you know, so it shouldn't be, it's a pain in the ass because it's all the way at the bottom. Like, if you flip the thing over, it's all going to be all the way at the bottom of the thing. So I have to remove the power supply, remove the cable to the LCD, remove the X, Y, and Z, and the power. And then pull that board completely out, put a new one in, you know, and then at some point, am I just going to say, fuck it, and just order a new one? at some point, you know, I don't think I'm going to go there. I'll probably, you know, I'll be willing to limp along with the Octopi for a little while because it does work and it works fine. You know, I have some, like, we have a little 3D printing Slack channel in our company. And some of the guys on there, I threw that in there and they're like, well, just load up Octopi and use that. He's like, I never used a micro SD card on my printer at all. And I'm like, well, there's a very good reason why you might want to use the micro USB. And here's why. Later in this week, I started a fairly large print. You know, we're talking maybe 12 hours. power blips out in the house. All right. I mean, just long enough for like the routers and stuff to need to restart themselves and stuff like that. Okay. Well, of course, that also restarts the Octopi. So my printer can resume from a power off state. However, because I'm running off the Octopi, I couldn't do that, which is a pain in the ass, which means my print failed technically.
Makes sense.
So that's why I'm not a fan of you. I mean, Octopi is great. Don't get me wrong. I mean, probably the biggest thing that I ever used on Octopi, I don't, like, if I got a new printer, what I'd probably do is probably just set up a security cam pointing right at the printer and be done with it. Because one other nice thing you can do with Octopi is you can have a webcam tied into the Pi so it can show you, you don't have to go to the office to look at the print. Probably going to be even more important once we move because I'll have to go upstairs to do that. Because it's where the printer will be.
No. You got to keep moving up and down them stairs as much as possible.
You know what? That's also not a bad idea either. but you know, so, you know, whatever. So, you know, we'll lip along like this for a while. I can see at least I can have time. I can still print right now. While I research what kind of board I'm going to put in it. I'll find one that works, that has silent drivers, and I'll be happy as long. And that's the other thing too, is whatever I order, I will want to make sure that I have the things with it necessarily, that's necessary, I should say, so that I can load Marlin on it if I have to load Marlin on it. So it'll want to make sure that I have all the cables with it, And a lot of those will require an ESP Arduino board to plug into that so that you can actually load the firmware on it. So, it happens. And, replacing a board is probably going to be a lot better than trying to order the replacement slot and try and work on it with the shitty soldering iron that I have. So what did you have with yours this week, Joe?
Well, I was trying to print out some hinge protectors. Started out printing out hinge protectors for the ATH M50X, an Audio Technica pair of headphones. And I printed out three different batches, and I would say less than half came out total. Three batches or four batches? But the problem kept being various things, but one of the original problems was that the support material was basically not making it all the way up to where it was supporting something. Okay, and also I was noticing what looked to be under extrusion at the higher points of the print. So I bumped up the temperature. Well, layer adhesion was a problem too, so I bumped up the temperature, lowered the fan speed. This was over several prints, trying out different things, and bumped up the extrusion rate by 0.5%. And yeah, that helped a little bit. Each one helped a little bit. But then I printed out something a little bit larger, which was a stand for the pine sill that I have. And I'm noticing in the thin parts, once again, I'm getting what looks to be under extrusion. Everything else looks great. And then I also had a major level shift. So it like moved half an inch off to one side towards the top and printed out horribly with just what looked to be under extrusion towards the top. So, you know, once again, this could be the board. That's what happened one of the times when I started getting level shifting at a certain height. It could just be that the nozzle's clogged. It could be that, well, no, that wouldn't explain the level shifting, but it might explain the almost under extrusion towards the top. If I'm not getting a good seal on my box, that might be why some of the layers aren't adhering, because it's not maintaining temperature as well as it should. It could be a loose belt causing the shifting. or it could be a motor that's going that's causing the shifting, or a motor that needs oiled, or, well, yeah, that's about it. So that's still a lot that could need to be replaced, and I'd have to go in and just start picking things at random to try. I don't know.
Sometimes it could be the model too.
My model is a little bit older, and while I have gotten new boards for it in the past, none of the boards that I can get for it without completely doing like all of the firmware custom would have the, what is it, 32-bit to be able to do that little bit more and have things like quiet drivers and suck less and Marlin.
Right. Well, actually, you brought up a very good point too, because I can, when I do upgrade the board, I can make sure that I get one that has 32-bit processor on it, instead of just a. I have no idea what the.
It's an 8-bit.
I think it's an 8. Isn't it? It's probably an 8-bit. Yeah. So
all
it'll
the boards went from 8-bit to 32-bit. So.
Wow, they just completely skipped 16-bit.
Yep.
So. Yeah, so I don't know exactly what that gets you. More efficient paths? I don't know. I mean, it's just spitting out the cheat code, so I mean.
But it lets you use more memory, essentially, and so you can do that little bit more. Drive a better display.
Right. Oh, well, yeah. Yeah. I don't necessarily care about driving a better display because I don't really want to replace that because it still
have
works.
The quiet
too.
Drivers, the quiet automatic drivers leveling.
Well, actually, that's an interesting thing too because I think some of the kids come with the AVL.
Yeah.
So, and at that key point, I can probably, I don't know, some of them would have the mount kit for the standard print head. Some of them I would have to probably print, like a bracket or something. So,
So
that's an interesting thought.
I'm considering getting a new 3D printer, probably the Monoprice, Maker. No, that's what I have, the Monoprice Maker Select V2, but go to the Ender, what is it, the V3 now?
V2 Pro.
Is it the Pro, or I thought they just had the V3 out now?
Ender 3 V3? I don't remember.
There is 3.
They did release a new Ender recently.
Yeah, it's a new one.
Right. I wanted to say V2, but I don't think it's that. I think it's different.
Yeah, the Pro is the V2. You can get the V2 as a Pro or non-Pro, but I think the V3 doesn't have a Pro yet. That's the whole thing. But the V3 has all the upgrades that people normally put on their V2 Pro.
Right. Yeah, Chep just did a video on that recently on Filament Friday. I believe it has a filament mount sensor.
Yeah. And so. It has the port. The V2 has the port connection, do have to do a software upgrade, but the port connection and power routing is already there for the automatic bed leveling.
Mm-hmm. Now the upside is before I do anything, once I get the kit here, I can probably power, cause they're essentially Arduino boards.
Yeah,
that's what usually runs these
boards.
Things. Yep. So you can preload the firmware prior to ripping apart the old one and putting it in. So, and also I can also use the Octopi to print whatever brackets I might need if I'm buying one that has the ABL. So, and that's a very good point because the ABL would help, you know, it would basically help
Take
me
some
get
time.
Yeah, well, it gets you better quality print. I mean, ABLs
it can
don't
make corrections for
minor
low spots in the bed or things like that. Yeah,
right.
Depending on what type it has.
Yeah, you still want to level the board or trim the board or do
you
whatever
still,
you want to call it.
You still
want to
do that first level, and you occasionally have to go around the block, but it's going to handle a lot of the times in between.
Right. Mm-hmm. Plus, no piece of glass or flexible bed is going to be 100% flat.
Yeah.
So the ABL will the mesh bed leveling will take care of that.
It's been an expensive few days. I had to buy, two new faucets? Ended up, I haven't put them in yet. But I also had to, I'm going to have to fix my Buick, which has been, sitting outside for months now because we haven't needed more than one vehicle because we don't go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But I also ended up buying a whole bunch of broken electronics to fix and repair. So I had a really, really fun three-day weekend over Easter, just messing around with electronics, fixing headsets.
Mm-hmm.
And today I was fixing Bluetooth speakers. Kind of awesome, too.
Yep. Well, that goes where I've been kind of jonesing to do some electronics work, so I guess my printer gave me some of that to do.
Yeah. I was really surprised at the set that I got because I got it at a really low price. Guy was trying to clean out his garage, and he used to buy Amazon returns and then fix them and sell them. Just hadn't done it in a while or something, and I ended up with two. Behr Dynamics DT770s.
Nice headphones.
Yeah, one of them worked perfectly. I've already got that sold. The other one, the right driver is out, and I'm not going to buy another one because they cost $70. And yeah, at that point, just the driver costs $70.
Yeah, it's a little.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can buy a good set. You can buy a good set of headphones for $70.
Yeah, but then there was also a Razer Nari Ultimate in there, which is an expensive headset. And once I updated the firmware on it, it worked perfectly. Really comfortable to wear. And then there was a Sennheiser HD 15599 SE, which is a $200 headset that was practically new that I guess someone had returned because they broke the cable on it. It needed the cable that was on it needed a new 3.5 millimeter jack, but the cable is detachable and a replacement cable is $14. And I swear the thing looks like it's never been worn.
Wow.
Yeah. So I'm going to try and sell that one next, but,
I always like Sennheisers.
I like some Sennheisers. Sennheisers sound good, but some of their Bluetooth ones have really piss poor touch controls.
Right. And I've never thought much of, Beats by Dre.
Beats ever. Is garbage. Beats has always been garbage. Beats will always be garbage. You won't convince me otherwise. That doesn't mean that the Beats that I got in this, the order, that when I get them fixed, I'm not going to turn around and sell them like they're not garbage.
Oh, they'll sell.
Yeah.
I know, because people are suckers.
I will sell them.
And I'm not even a that picky of a person when it comes to headphones, and I even won't buy, them because one, they're expensive for all they are. That's big reason why I won't buy them. But like my favorite, I will say that my latest, SLB, I forget which LGs I have. It's a USB-C, rechargeable, USB, LG headsets, Ultratone, or whatever they call it. I forget the model number, but those things are great. Those are really good headphones. My other Bluetooth ones I use all the time, I use specifically with my iPad.
There was 30 or 40 different sets of the wireless, true wireless earbuds. There was maybe 10 sets that are working perfectly, and then a whole bunch that, they're never gonna work.
Yep.
The Galaxy Buds, the Galaxy Buds Plus.
Meh.
you know, they seem to fall apart rather quickly. And the ones that I did take apart, you know, because the most obvious thing to be wrong with them is the battery. Beyond that, I'm not going to be able to change out any tiny little parts on those things. I don't know anybody that could.
The other headphones that I have, Bluetooth ones I use with my iPad, are the Hypersonic Linear Flux Edition, third edition.
Well,
and they're basically, you know, there's no wire between the two buds, and it comes with a USB rechargeable case.
My favorite fix, just because, you know, I had to do a little body modification on it too, was this set of trucker headphones or headset. You know, the Bluetooth communication headsets by PLT, and that was because I got to use ribbon cable and replace the power line that goes across the whole set.
Ooh.
Drilled now, a hole and ran it across, and yeah.
Now, I do have a headset that I bought that I use. I usually use this one, or used to use this one for work, which is, this is actually one that they actually bought. That I'm using tonight, which is a Logitech HB600. It's the wireless set with the dongle and works fine with Linux. But one of the problems with these Logitech ones is if I'm on like a long Zoom call and I want to run to the kitchen and get a coffee or something, they'll start to cut out.
Mm.
All right. So, while I was waiting for these to be sent back, or not sent back, sent to me, I should say, because I bought this with our company office supply account, and they just stopped working all of a sudden one day. So I hit up Logitech and say, "Oh, we'll send you a new pair." I'm like, "Okay," but while that was happening, I had to have another set. So over the weekend, one weekend, this is well before I moved, I bought an Avantri AEH-6B Bluetooth headset. Which is actually really nice and has better range than this Logitech one. Well, somehow between either in the move or slightly after the move, I don't remember when, I busted the frame on it. All right. And the first thing I tried was ye olde standards like super glue or crazy glue. That didn't work really at all to fix it because it just wouldn't set up fast enough. So, I had bought some, it's the Cyano Acrylic, Bob Smith Industries MaxiCure Cyano Acrylic Glue with, the accelerant, a little spray on bottle of accelerant. Drip that onto either side of the headphones, spray the accelerant on, and they were fixed instantly. Good stuff. And the wire would never, you know, nothing ever pulled out. The headphones were always working. It was just the frame that was busted. So, Dan, you ordered another sound card.
Yeah, I'm going to try a new sound card out on this thing.
Another USB one?
Well, that's the only thing I can put in there is USB.
Right, it's a laptop, right?
No, it's Raspberry Pi.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so the USB card that we've had in there forever only has like a headphone jack and a microphone. And I figured I'd just get one with an actual line in.
Oh, okay.
So I spent $8 more. No. I spent $8 extra on it to get one with a line in. Not another one like this. Although, this one worked fine for a few years now. But we'll see. We'll see.
Yep.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know. Yeah.
And Murph will be happy. Murph is touched.
yeah. You know, I don't know. It's always kind of hit and miss when you go looking for, devices, you know what I mean?
Well, sometimes it's hit and miss on whether it works with Linux, not as much as it used to be.
Oh no,
usually,
like, it's not just Linux now. It's, will it work with the version, the version of Pi, what I'm running Raspbian on here. Is it Raspbian or Armbian?
Probably. Raspberry Pi OS.
I think it's Armbian.
Raspberry Pi OS. That's what it is.
No, you don't know what it is. Why do you think it's Raspberry Pi OS? Did I say that?
If you thought it was Raspbian, then it would be Raspberry Pi OS.
Right.
It is.
It's renamed. That's where we got to talk about Docker in our 3D printing channel. I don't know why, but
yeah, it is Raspberry Pi. I don't know. I think it's Raspberry.
Yep, there you go.
How do you tell which version you're running? I can't remember anymore.
Is it in the LSB release?
Oh yeah, there's.
It's the LSB release, I think maybe.
No, I have Etsy Debian version, but it only tells me it's Debian version 8.
Yeah, it's probably Raspberry Pi OS or Raspbian.
Oh wait.
Which is the same.
Well then it's obviously not Armbian.
Truth.
It's raspberrypi.org.
Okay, it's Raspberry Pi OS.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I got
probably not Ubuntu, but it could be.
Yeah, well.
That's true too, but. I've tried Ubuntu on my Pi 4 running, in the 7-inch LCD case. It's okay. That's about all I can say. There's certain things that don't work as nice on it. But it's just okay. Right now, my Pi 4's got Twister OS, which is really nice because I can switch up the interface when I want to.
But, turn Twister OS.
Turn Twister OS. No. Twister OS. Cause you can switch between various interfaces. They basically have skinned it so you can make it, if you really, really want to make it look like Windows XP, you can make it look like Windows XP. Why would you want to do that? But no,
you hate yourself?
Yeah, right.
Wait, are you talking about a Raspberry Pi 4?
Yes.
And you're using it as a desktop?
Kind of, sort of. Right now, the only thing I really use it for on a daily basis is I loaded up Flip Clock Screensaver, so it's a clock on my desktop. But
I need to replace the case on mine. Well, the fan in my case on mine.
Right.
Because it's loud and obnoxious.
The big thing, why I probably don't use it as often is just a space issue. You know, where I'm at right now. I don't have, it has, right now the only place I really have the stick is on my desk and it's just not set up so that I can just use it whenever I want to. But, It is nice, like sometimes I'll go over to the Pi. I got USB speakers connected to it, and I can, like, if I wanted to, watch some, you know, fire up YouTube in the background, have it playing on there, I can play it on there, or I can play it on my iPad, or whatever, you know, so basically, I just don't have a really, real dedicated space where I can use it as a desktop. I can, you know, it's just, I think also too, is some of the desktop interfaces just don't play that well on a 7-inch screen. So it's better if on down the road, I might just buy another, once I have the space, I'll buy like a complete brand new Raspberry Pi 4 with 8 gig. Buy the Argon 1 M2 case, which is probably by far one of the best cases you can get for the Pi 4. Has heat sinks built into the case. I don't think you have to put a fan on it. But then at that point, then I would just plug it straight up into like a plain old LCD somewhere. Like at least something that has at least 1080p. So, Anyway. Because I think one of the first purchases I probably will buy for the home office once I get there is I am thinking about buying a TV to stick in there. And I'm debating whether I want to get the vase mount so I can just hang it on the wall. I don't know. Still thinking about that. Either that or get like an IKEA TV stand or something like that. But it would make having that in there would make the long nights when we have a long OS outage, OS patching outage or something, make it a lot easier because I can just fire that up with probably Roku TV or something like that. But also because my little power blip, I think one of the other things I'd like to get for that probably sooner than later is a UPS for my office and a UPS for my wife's office so that, you know, those little power blips don't hurt as much. Keep my internet going. Isn't that... Never fails that when you have something like that happen, you're in the middle of something and it throws your whole workflow off. Hate that. And then everything finally comes back up and you're like, where was I?
Yeah. Man, we had an out, Cox had an outage on Monday, like this whole area. And it was like right, like 5 minutes before my meeting, I had to go into two meetings and like it was out for 45 minutes. And the weird thing was like you could resolve, DNS, you could ping stuff, but you couldn't connect to anything.
Could you switch to like Google DNS and then that work?
No, that didn't work either because I have my own DNS server.
Oh, okay.
So I have two, I've tried theirs, I tried mine. It wasn't, resolution wasn't a problem, it just like, and I've had this happen before, like it just wasn't, some things would work, like, weirdly enough, Slack was working, but I couldn't get access to, GitHub properly, and I couldn't get access to certain Google services, and I could not, and Microsoft Teams, which is where they were having the meeting, absolutely would not load.
Huh. I was unlucky enough to have to sit through a meeting in Microsoft Teams, and it fucking sucks.
Doesn't it pick up like
it's
all the noise?
It's freaking awful. Oh yeah, you're right. It picks up like I had my door closed and my son was talking in the next room and it freaking picked that up. It's like, and that doesn't happen on Zoom. it's awful.
Yeah. Teams is terrible.
It's cause we were working through PayPal for a client where they didn't do their paperwork in time. So they're sitting here trying to take credit cards. But they're not connected back to their processor in the back end of PayPal. So it's like everything we had is configured right, but because the business side of things wasn't configured right, they couldn't take any payments. Yay me. 2 hour calls of PayPal. Yay.
Man, I gotta give it to Zoom though, man. They do a decent job. They do what Microsoft can't.
Yep.
The only thing, product.
When I get good internet again, I'll use usually like when I was on my Spectrum cable at the house, I had no problems. I'd run video all the freaking time. You know, I'd make sure I'd look good and stuff, you know, before I get in the call, and then I get in the call and I'd be on video all the time. You know, now 9 times out of 10, I have to shut it off because I've got bandwidth issues. Now some of it I'll shut off because somebody else on the line has worse bandwidth issues than I do, and by them having to suck my video feed down, that slows them down too. So then at that point I'll shut it off. Like that happened today with we're trying to work with SAP support, so And it's like, so 50 meg is a bare minimum. In a daily, like, normal day-to-day use, it's probably okay. But we're not going to deal with that once I get to the house. It's not happening. I'm going to switch over to Time Warner or Spectrum or whatever you want to call them now. Spectrum is what they are. And I'm going to buy gigabit. Also going to buy my cable modem. I'm going to get the one I'm looking at, I think, is – I have to go back. It's on my Amazon wish list, but it's about $200. And I told the wife that it's going to cost that much. I said, but our regular Spectrum bill will be down like $10. And she's like, oh, okay. Cause I said, and in the year or so, in a year or so, that would be paid for and we can keep using it until the damn thing dies, you know, and the only time we'd have to go back to rented box is if I had an emergency and we didn't have enough cash to go buy a new one. So, but I'm looking at the best one I can get that doesn't have like built-in router and all that. I just want to use my mesh routers. So the Asus Zen Mini, I think, is one I have with Wi-Fi 6. So, and I'm debating whether I want to, when I move, if I want to buy another, well, here's the kind of sucky part. So I want to buy some more nodes for the mesh. I think I can't buy, I really just want just one, but I think I have to buy two. So.
Well, don't you have to have it for the mesh?
Well, the kit I had, the starter kit I had, has three.
Right.
So I only really need an extra one. Right. So which would give me up to four, but I had to buy two. So which take me up to five. Now the three I have, the three I have says it'll cover up to, I'm thinking I may have to buy another one because I want to say I have to look it up again. I want to say I think the three I have is only supposed to cover 1,400 square feet. Our house is 2014. So, I don't know. Cause then I could, so what I was planning on doing is I was going to put, the main one in my office that's connected direct to the modem. And then put one of them in my wife's office, which I'll have a switch in there so she can directly connect wire-wise there. And then the other one I would probably put out in the living room. But it might not be a bad idea for me to at least put one in my other, in our main bedroom and then one in Luke's room maybe. Cause it'll have wire Ethernet too. I don't know. I'll have to see. I guess I'll have to see how it works when we move in to see what the range looks like. In the apartment, it's perfect. You know, I'm just fine. I have really good signal pretty much everywhere in my apartment, whether I'm out in the living room or in the bedroom and or the office. And the one nice thing too is, in the interface for the mesh, if you have a wireless device, do you absolutely want it to bind to the same same node every time? Like I have Wi-Fi things that live in my office and basically they shouldn't need to connect to either the other two nodes. I can say just connect to this node and bind it to that node. So that's the only node it'll connect to. So it kind of helps balance things out. Most of my mobile devices, like my phone and stuff, and my laptops, I'll generally just say, just pick up whichever node you can get. So, the laptop itself just looks for the same SSID, which all three nodes are the same same two SSIDs. There's the 5 gig and the 2 gig one. But you can tell the mesh to always make it go to that particular node for its communications. So, but I don't know. Mine's fine. Mine doesn't have some of them have some of the mesh systems have a backhaul, a wireless backhaul that's not the Wi-Fi network itself. These do not have that. These I can set up for a wired backhaul, and that's how I'm going to do it in the house. In the apartment, they're wireless backhaul right now. Which, because there's not an independent wireless system, it uses the Wi-Fi network for the backhaul. So, once I go to the house and all the nodes are wired, then the backhaul will be wired and the Wi-Fi network will be unimpeded by just the backhaul back to the main node. So, mesh networking is fun. And it's been the best, I've had the best Wi-Fi I've ever had since I bought one of those.
So how much are they?
That was, the base system was $300.
Woo! $300.
Yeah, a little pricey, but.
And who makes that again?
Mine's made by Asus.
Asus.
The Zen Mini.
$300, huh? Is that, yep. Is that what they're going through for still?
Yep. It might be slightly under that. I think it might have been 250. But you're not looking for, you have between 250 and 300 at least for a mesh system. And the upside is Asus firmware is actually based on open source. I'm trying to remember. I think it's based on OpenWRT, if I remember right. Not that I could use OpenWRT, but I don't. I just use Asus firmware, which is perfect. It does the job. Yep.
The one I saw there listed was like $450.
Yeah, it can be that expensive. Some of them are really expensive.
$449.
And I kind of went with that one because the other two competitors, I think, the real competitors, are Amazon's Aero, E-E-R-O, and then the Google mesh system. I have enough Google products and enough Amazon products. I didn't really want to add more.
Does Google Wi-Fi mesh system, does that integrate with Google services?
I believe it, and that's the other thing too. I think that I think that their nodes also are like Nest Minis.
I like how I talk about something with somebody and then a day later it shows up on my Google, like, suggestions. Like, how did it know I was talking about French bread pizza? And now it's showing me ads for French bread pizza.
I air fried my pizza today.
I'm probably going to bake a pizza here in a little while. I say bake. Make.
What kind of pizzas? Joel and Joe?
Turkey straight pepperoni?
Yeah, straight up pepperoni with Hormel Cup of Crisp pepperoni.
On lavish bread?
There you go.
Oh, so you're like mostly making it, except you're not making the dough.
That's exactly what I did. Yeah. I bought a bubbly crust.
That's cool.
Although I have used the cauliflower crusts before. Which if you've never heard of those, it's cauliflower based crust. It doesn't taste
now,
like crust.
Your cauliflower based crust, from what I understand, they do save you supposed like carbs, but they don't really save you calories.
That's correct.
So now a lot of people, you know, don't understand that weight gain and loss is literally calories in, calories out.
Yep.
So here's something I made in the air fryer last week, and it turned out pretty good, and I'm still working on it, though. There's this Thai restaurant down in Chesapeake. You guys don't even know what the hell Chesapeake is, right? It's a town down here. It's a town down here, just a little south of Virginia Beach.
I do had a client down there.
Yeah, there you go. So there's this Thai restaurant there, and it had this appetizer that it was like dry fried chicken or dry fried pork or dry fried beef. And it was just like chicken that I don't know how they do it, and I should probably look it up, but it's fried, but there's no breading on it, and they've marinated it in like a Thai sauce that has a bit of fish sauce in it, and so it's kind of it tastes great. I don't know how to describe it, but it tastes great. So I tried to replicate that at home because I accidentally did it when I getting close to it when I was making testing out chicken wing, different ways to cook chicken wings in there, and so I just took a couple of two chicken thighs and I deboned them and removed the skin and I sliced them up into small pieces and marinated it. In just a tablespoon of tamari, tablespoon of fish sauce, and a tablespoon of Shaoxing wine. And I let that sit for a couple hours, and then I let it dry. I took it out, and I should have let it dry maybe. Put it in the refrigerator and kind of let it dry. That would make sense if it was dry fried. But then I just put that on in the air fryer, and I think I did it at 250 for 20 minutes until it got up to a safe temperature. And then I put it in the refrigerator for a half hour, and I pulled it back out, put it back in so that it cooled down at 425 for 10 minutes. And it got really crispy, like, it dried it out, got a little crispy. And it was pretty damn close. I'm still working on it though, but it was pretty damn close, man. That was good.
The Zen Wi-Fi AX dual band mesh Wi-Fi system. Specifically, if you're looking for it, look for XD4. The 3-pack is $279.
On Amazon?
Actually, on Best Buy.
Oh.
I have to look and see what it is on Amazon.
Which one is it again?
Zen Wi-Fi AX dual band, specifically if you look up for XD4, that's the model.
So I see the Asus AC1750 system has three of them.
And it's the same price on Amazon. And actually, I'm wrong. That covers 4,800 square foot, so I technically probably don't need additional when I move. Because it'll probably cover my entire property.
The AX dual band mesh, right? AX dual band
yes,
mesh?
Yes, sir. Yep.
How come I don't Wi-Fi see that on... I don't see it on Amazon. I see one that doesn't have any price listed.
It's on Amazon.
I see it, but there's no price. Let's see. Let's see all buying options.
I actually have the white one too. I don't have the charcoal or white.
I don't know, man. Yeah, I should probably look at getting something like that, because my wireless connection's pretty good.
Right.
But it's just to that point where if you're in the backyard, it just doesn't go through all the...
Yeah.
It doesn't reach as well as it could.
Well, see, where's your main router? Is it in the living room there?
My Wi-Fi?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like in the middle of the house. Like right there.
Right, so it covers you downstairs and covers the basement and covers the upstairs, but just outside the house, not as good.
Well, if I can sit outside in the front yard and work, and I can work in the backyard, but sometimes it gets a little iffy, particularly in the backyard. The front is pretty good, but the back is touch and go. And I know my wife has problems connecting on her Chromebook, which is my Chromebook, because Asus just fixed it or replaced it and sent it out the other day, supposedly.
I'm still trying to find the little ones that, in a two-pack, and I'm not seeing them there. I'll have to look around and see if I can find more. I probably won't need them, though. Because I think right now, I think of the two bedrooms that aren't the owner's suite, that my son's going to take the one that's kind of in the middle. There's the one that's, if you look at my house and you see the two windows in the front on the right hand side, that's one bedroom. The other bedroom has one window that is, and it's kind of in the middle, so it's between there's the main, the hall bath, and then it's got a bedroom on either side. Then there's the owner's suite, which is, you know, our bed, you know, my wife and I's bedroom, plus the it has a huge walk-in closet, and it has a double sink in the master bath, or owner bath, or whatever you want to call it. then, ironically enough, the toilet's in one little room all by itself. which I'm still trying to figure out why they did it that way, but there's actually going to be a door there, so not that it matters. But, and then there's the actual linen closet right in the bathroom as well, so like our towels and stuff will go in there. So, but... So one of the Wi-Fi nodes will be, like I said, upstairs over the garage. So that's going to be over the front. And then the other one's in my wife's office, which is also the front. And then we'll have the other one in the great room, which is going to be viewable from the kitchen. So I think coverage-wise, we should be good. May not be the best spread, but unless I decide what I may do is put one of them in Luke's room and then just put a switch in my wife's office, because then that way she can just plug into the switch. But because I have a couple switches. Like I have a my office will have a 16-port switch, and then I have a 6-port and an 8-port, all gig. So, and the cable they're putting in is 6E, so it'll go up to 10 gig.
All right, guys. I'm cutting out.
No, it's getting late.
It's getting late.
6 minutes to go.
I'm falling asleep here. Yep. I'll talk to you later.
See ya. Yeah, no reason for me to upgrade my switches to 10 gig, because I can't go that fast on anything I have in right now anyway. But I'll be future-proofed, so. I know some of the show were like, what? Is that all the cabling you're putting in? It's like, well, how much do I really need? You know, I've got four going from my office that's going to go to the three bedrooms in the living room. I don't really need an Ethernet jack in the kitchen, do I? Or in the screen room. Actually, that might not be a bad idea, but and one of the things I'm thinking about the screen room is like putting a TV out there, but I'm actually probably thinking more along the lines of a projector, you know. Because that way I can do a projector with the screen hanging over one of the screen windows, and then in the winter when we're not going to be out there, I can just pull the projector in this, you know. So if I put a TV out there, I would probably mount it on one of the poles holding the screen room up. And I wouldn't want to take it down, if you know what I mean. Because I'm fucking lazy. But, and I'm definitely planning on doing some work, like doing work out in that screen room in the afternoons. But we'll see how it all works when the thing gets built.
You know, this
hoping
month
we
is,
have Windows this week. What is it? It's April.
You know, it's in April. April 22nd.
Two days after my next COVID shot.
Well, it's the release of Ubuntu 20.04 Hips. What is it? Hipster? Hairsuit. Hippo.
Would be 21.04.
Yes, 21.04.
Yes.
Using GNOME 3.3.8. Not 4.
Woohoo.
And Linux 5.11.
I'm on Kubuntu 2010 right now, so.
And they're going to Wayland again as a default display server.
Again?
The team plans to give Wayland a try with this release. So.
Terrific.
Back to Wayland.
What's it running now? It's not Wayland now? I thought it was Wayland.
No,
now.
They bounced back to X11, I think, a year or two ago, because there was some stability issues with Wayland. And problems people were having, so they switched it back to X11, and now they're going to Wayland.
So you were talking about X, and it just reminds you of when we thought it was super cool to run Barrel. Remember Barrel?
Oh, yeah. Barrel and
Wobbly Windows.
Comp is?
Yes.
Yeah.
We talked for hours on that shit, and now we don't fucking care.
Is that available still? I thought they integrated it into just, you could do some of that into the standard.
I thought it was in the X-Free desktop, I thought.
Yeah. I haven't tried playing around with it in a while.
Yeah, me either.
Get the cube going on your desktop, turned into a cube. And that was pretty neat. I will admit that. And you can.
It was stuff Windows couldn't do at the time.
Yeah. Man, I'll tell you what I am hating. I'm hating that freaking Mac bar. That touch bar on the Mac Book Pro. I cannot stand that thing. I'm gonna turn it. I was just looking. I should have looked at this a while ago. Apparently you could turn it, not turn it off, but disable
just make it. Function bar.
So it's just, it's not a fully function bar. Like, I think the best that you can do is you can have an escape key and then the bar that has like the volume control and stuff like that and let it stay like that. Because I can't tell you how many times I go and I'm sitting there typing away into my terminal and I go to hit the escape key, but it's not an escape key anymore. There's something else there. And oh, and how many times I hit that stupid Siri button. I hate that.
Interesting. Well, Barrel is now Compiz, right? It is.
It's something like that.
Because I searched for that and it brought up Compiz. So Barrel was a project name for the Quinstorm branch of Compiz, announced September 19, 2006, after Compiz developer Quinstorm and the developer team decided to fork.
We had Quinstorm on our show, didn't we?
I don't know.
Yeah,
Quinstorm. I'm pretty sure. Quinn.
Yeah, Quinstorm.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, I remember speaking to Quinstorm.
So, and what happened is there was a merger of the Compiz and the Barrel communities. And now, and going forward, like, in more recent history, the Unity desktop that was written, you know, that Canonical was working on in 2010 was written as a plugin for Compiz. And Compiz is enabled by default on Ubuntu since version 7.10. With the wobbly windows and the magic lamp effect. And all that crazy stuff that I don't think anybody turns on anymore. And the Cube plugin for Compiz on Fedora. With the last stable release in November of 2019.
What the hell is this? Oh, shit.
Uh-oh.
I forgot I got the forum working again a while ago. And I'm like, well, what the? I'm like looking at this and I'm like.
Did somebody actually posted it?
I'm like, I just did a search for Quinstorm on TLLTS. And there's like interview Val Henson. Linuxlink.net, and I'm like, wait a minute. Tech show discussion, and it's like, it's the forum, and I'm like, where's this? Because I thought the forum was offline.
The Wayland Compositor.
I thought we did Quinstorm. I know we had Quinstorm then.
Did you see the trailer for season 2 of Picard?
No. January 3rd, 2007. The 7th is
when. Okay.
Interviewed Quinstorm. I'm sorry. No, I did not see that.
Yep. Guess who's coming back? Q will be back, and John DeLancey. So he's going to probably be a major player in the season 2 of Star Trek Picard. Did you finish season 1 yet?
Yeah, I finished that.
Okay. I don't want to spoil it for listeners who haven't seen it yet, but you know, good surprises at the end of the season. Now, I already know they're talking, LeVar Burton's gonna reprise Geordi next season. I think Whoopi Goldberg's supposed to be back as Guinan. And now we know John DeLancey because he was featured in the trailer. He's in trailer, the trailer went back and brought the line from All Good Things. That he used towards the tail end of that episode where he said the trial never ended. Because that's how TNG started, with the trial of humanity by the Q continuum. So, it'll be fun. They did have a trailer of Discovery also. Which, did you finish that?
I did not see any Discovery yet.
Oh, okay. All right. I won't say anything about that then. You should. It's not as bad as I thought it would be. The last season was pretty good.
I wanted to watch it. I just haven't had a chance to.
I haven't watched any. That's like I wanted to watch, well, WandaVision, I don't know. I'm going to have to just gut my way through the first few episodes of it. I just did not like the first episode at all.
But you got to watch Winter Soldier and Falcon and Winter Soldier.
Yeah, that started too.
There are three episodes in now.
And I think it's Lost in Space due out soon, I think. The last season of it.
Maybe.
I don't know. It's really good if you haven't seen it yet, Lost in Space. Oh, it was so good. Also makes me wonder if they're going to, if you haven't seen it yet, Interstellar, if you haven't seen it, that's worth a watch if you haven't seen it.
Oh, yeah, I saw Interstellar. I like that a lot.
Yeah, it was real fun, I thought.
Yeah. We got to start wrapping this up.
Yes,
I saw Godzilla versus King Kong. I love that. We had a ball watching that.
You see, but you like to always like the monster movies anyway.
Absolutely.
The Japanese ones.
Absolutely.
See, for me, it's like the last Godzilla movie I saw, I was right after Luke was born, and I took her to see the Matthew Broderick one. Remember that one? That
oh my
was
goodness.
Awful. That was so bad.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right, guys. See you next week.
Wait, I didn't get the promos. Excuse me.
Play promos, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do 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 do.
There we go.
Did you finally put out the pasture, the one that mentions Fitty?
I haven't played that one in a long time.
Okay, it's
when
good.
They told me to stop playing it.
He only played it for a year after he died.
Well, you know, it was in honor of him, so.
I guess.
You know? All right. Here we go.
Oh my god. It's Hacker Public Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
Hello, my name is Matt, and I've started a new podcast called LibreQuest. I talk about Linux and general technical topics. To get the show, visit LibreQuest.org.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
Well, you were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
See, when's Black Widow finally going to come out?
When's what?
Black Widow.
Isn't it April? Isn't it? Wait.
It is April now, but...
No, July 9th.
Okay. And then Top Gun 2.
No, they can keep that.
Right. All the movies that didn't come out last year, they're going to finally bring out this year, huh?
Well, apparently Black Widow is being released and will be streaming on Disney Plus at the same time.
RDJ is in it too. Well, of course he is. It's a prequel. I forgot. It's not based in the 90s, too, is it?
I have no idea what year it's based in.
Hey, you'd be proud of me. I finally did watch Captain Marvel. It's better than I thought it would be. I still don't like her as an actress, but it was better than I thought it would be.
Yeah, I don't think Black Widow's based in the 90s.
Okay, that's good.
I don't think it is. I gotta stop the recording. Get this.
Actually, it could be. It says when the USSR breaks up.
Yeah, maybe it is.
So it could be early to mid. I don't know. I miss going to see movies.
Yeah.
Oh wait, Rachel Wise is in it. You know, like, she was in something else. Was she in the Mummy movies?
Who?
Rachel, I don't know how you're saying her name. It's Weisz, Rachel Wise. No, it's she. Well, maybe it could be because, yeah, hold on a sec.
Yeah, she was in the 1999 version of The Mummy.
And she was in the Mummy movies, yes.
And The Mummy Returns.
Yep. She was Brandon Fraser's love interest in those. Okay. In the first one, and I think at some point in the series, she married him. But she's in Black Widow doing something.
Yeah, all right. Let me stop this recording. Say goodnight, Joel.
Goodnight, Joel. Try it, mostly because it's not a flavor I'd normally try, but it's not horrible. I've had worse.
Wait, is it the reg? You got a diet one?
Yeah, zero sugar.
So I guess they have regular and then zero sugar.
Yeah.
Did you get like a can of it or a?
I get them by the 12 pack.
So you went whole hog and decided to throw it all caution to the wind then.
This will be my second 12 pack of that I've gotten. Like I said, it's just really sweet, but my son enjoys them too. So, I also got the, Dr. Pepper Cream Soda Zero.
That's good.
Which is really good. It sells out quick. I was lucky to find like 2 12 packs of it today. And then the Zero Cherry is pretty good too. And the regular Dr. Pepper Zero is pretty good. And then the regular Mountain Dew Zero is also good. But the only thing I saw in the Mountain Dew today was the like Baja Blast Zero. And I think I'm not going to try that one.
Yeah. I haven't tried it yet, but the watermelon one, which I'm not sure about.
Then my wife got me some AHA.
Mm-hmm. The hell is AHA?
It's sparkling water.
Yeah.
Oh. I knew that one. So, yeah, I had a Dr. Pepper Cream Soda that was really good. I liked it. What's funny, though, is for like 1 week they had the Dr. Pepper Zero Sugar, and then regular diet Dr. Pepper showed up. And honestly, there's really no difference between the two, but
there's a little bit of difference in the aftertaste.
Yeah,
you get that
maybe.
More aspartame from the diet than you do from the zero sugar.
Maybe. I don't know. I really didn't notice too much of a difference because I like both of them. But it's like I can't, if I can't find the one I want, I prefer buying like a Sam's Club usually has 36 pack cans. But they haven't had Dr. Pepper for months now. Diet Dr. Pepper. Just regular. The only diet they had, I think, was Diet Pepsi in Pepsi products.
Yeah.
Which up here in Ohio, Dr. Pepper is a Pepsi product.
I've never liked the, like, Diet Mountain Dew. But the zero sugar, Mountain Dew is actually pretty good.
Yeah, I haven't either.
And then, like, the six-pack bottles, The only thing you can find is like mainline for the Zeros. So like regular Dr. Pepper, yep. Zero, regular Pepsi Zero.
Yep.
And I haven't tried much of the rest of the Coke family.
Must be all stuck on the, Evergreen. Or Everline, whatever the name of that ship was.
And you can't really find, like, zero sugar cream soda other than the Dr. Pepper cream soda.
Well, and my wife likes the A&W diet cream soda, which we can find, but it's actually not easy to find either.
Yeah, it's pretty rare. So what'd you eat for dinner?
I had steak.
Grubhub steak?
Nope. Grilled on my Cuisinart Griddler steak. Since that's the only kind of way I can grill it around here. Unless I bought, now they have these little charcoal grills all over the apartment complex. But it's like having to drag all that out to the grill out there and then to bring it back in the house or to like bring everything outside and eat outside. Actually, today would have been a beautiful day for that, but nah, I just used my Griddler. Well, and I didn't have any baked potatoes to go with it, so I just made some fries in the air fryer.
Cool. Now, I had some chili, but I took like some, what was it, Wolf Brand turkey, low-fat chili and added.
Dude, are you like the Wolf Pit man?
added some, black beans and some, hot pico de gallo. And some honey barbecue sauce. And it was delicious. And some cheese.
Doesn't sound awful.
It was delicious.
See, I discovered inadvertently, if you do like Grubhub for Chick-fil-A or something, you can get their sauces in 8-ounce bottles.
Hmm.
So I just wanted Chick-fil-A sauce because I like to put Chick-fil-A sauce on my sandwich. And it came in, I opened up the bag and there was this little 8-ounce bottle in there. I'm like, ooh, that's cool. I'm going to have to do that again. Give me either Chick-fil-A sauce, that one's good, or the Polynesian sauce from Chick-fil-A is good too. But.
Yeah, but pico de gallo is one of those things that I have to keep around.
Yep. I can understand that. Tasty.
One serving of it is also like 5 calories.
Let's kick this pig. I got a little bit of 3D printing.
Yeah, me too.
Stuff to talk about.
Oh, everybody's got 3D printing stuff now.
Yeah, because I'm gonna actually have to start shopping for a part. Maybe. I don't know.
I have to go fishing for what part? I'm not sure.
Yeah, it might be the same with me, too. We'll get into that.
Alright. I got some stuff, too.
Yeah. It's April, 1 month until the month we close.
Who closes?
We will.
Your house. I was thinking your business, yeah. Like the company you work for. I'm like, I don't remember them closing.
No, we're doing well, too well, actually. I have too much shit to do. As usual. And it keeps getting worse. We lost the guy this, last week, so.
On your house?
No, one of my teammates, he went to go work for another company.
Oh, I thought you meant he died. I was like,
debating making a joke, but I try not to do that when people are dead.
I didn't know whether you were talking about, you lost somebody that was working at the house, you lost somebody you go to church.
He may as well be, and I'll talk about this now while you're finishing your prep, but he basically, he got this other job, right? And then instantly kind of turned into a little bit of an ass to my manager. So Thursday comes, all of a sudden I get some extra tickets reassigned to me that used to belong to him. And he asked me some things about that. And either the night before or early that morning, there was a team huddle, like right around 11:30. So we go rolling to that team huddle, and she says, because of his behavior, I told him, I'm revoking his access as of now, and he can have Friday off to prepare for his new position. So basically, that was it. And as far as I know, we were going to at least have a little bit of a goodbye Zoom call or something. And she had started working on a going away card for him, but now we didn't collect any money for a gift like we did for the last one that left. But it's like, you know, she's like, "You're gone.
Bye." Last day.
He basically just started acting like an ass. And
let's have you escorted out by security. Oh wait, you're not in the office. Don't call us ever.
Well, and ironically, he probably left for a job that made less money. So he was just kind of
reasoning,
wanted out. Yeah.
He wasn't happy. Yeah.
He hasn't been happy for a while, but then, you know, he's the kind of guy that's not happy unless he is presented to them as Jesus. So, he's a good guy, not the best teammate, if you know, I like him, I'm still friends with him, you know. You know, I'm friends with him, I respect him and all that stuff because he earned my respect, he helped train me, because he was in professional services just like myself before we moved over to cloud, but I know, you know, I can deal with his attitude. Some of the other teammates probably have problems with it. You know, it's just, you know, the guy that's just not a great teammate. So.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yep. Let's all go, right. Dano.
Woo! 901.
That's how I got hired at Chippendales.
Pizza, pizza.
Wait, we're starting that all over again. I don't know what happened there. It was a delay and Joel's burp. And give me a count around, Joel.